Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. We speak in this atmosphere, and we say, let there be light. My title for the series for the month of July is this. And it's a phrase that we've used before, but I want to look at it again. Words are important. They have a certain energy on them. There's a certain way that words make me feel. There's a certain way that phrases affect me, that I'm attracted to them. And going next level, when something is next level, that speaks of progression, that speaks of evolution, that speaks of positive change. One thing that is absolutely non-changing in our life is change. I mean, things are always going to be changing. You have to decide how they're going to change. I was thinking about this morning. I don't want to get ahead of myself with the outline, but I hear a lot of people say something to this effect, like, well, if it's meant to be, it'll happen. And I understand what they're saying, but there's a danger in relying too much on what is meant to be. I think too much neutrality. I believe in going with the flow. I believe in acceptance. I think when you realize something in your life is inevitable, that you have to accept it, learn to flow with it. However, if everything is just, well, if it's meant to be, it'll happen, you may set yourself up for either other people hijacking your destiny or just nothing happening at all. So I do believe that intention is important, decision is important. I can't tell you many people lately I've told this to, as I've told you, I used to say, follow the peace and make your decision, and now I nearly think just the opposite. It's just make a decision and the peace will follow that. I don't think God's as opinionated about minutiae as we think he is, other than, obviously, he cares for us. You know, Jesus said, the hairs of your head are numbered. But as far as every little decision you make, I just think you decree a thing and it's established. I think it's nearly a Christian urban legend that there's this bigger plan working that we don't know anything about. I think you have to make the plan. Let us make people in our image and let them have dominion. And I think it's nearly it's a lazy theology just to say, if it's meant to happen, it's going to. I don't necessarily like the everything happens for a reason concept either. I like all things work together for good. I can accept that. But everything happens for a reason. Look, there's some things that happen that I don't like and I don't want to accept. I don't want to just say, oh, well, everything happens for a reason. Some things should never happen in the world. If you said everything happens for a reason and just left it at that, there'd be no activists. There'd be nobody trying to bring about change. Somebody's got to push back. We would have never had a civil rights movement if people had just said, well, you know, everything happens for a reason. No, some things aren't supposed to happen. People aren't supposed to just be gunned down in cold blood. And you know, so even if you're not personally pushing back on it, you should at least support other people's rights too. Because peace is important. Neutrality is dangerous. Neutrality just means, you know, the time's getting away from me and I'm not making anything happen. And it's a constant, it's a dance. You know what I mean? It's like sometimes you lead, sometimes destiny leads. Sometimes when you don't know what's going on, you have no alternative but to say, well, he's doing more than I can ask or think. There's other times where you have to say, I've got to drive a stake in the ground. I've got, nothing's happening until I decide it. Most of the people, I've never actually sat down and written, and I'm sure it'd be easy to find online. Most of the people that Jesus healed, though, if memory serves, he asked them, what do you want? I don't know that he ever came to anybody and initiated the healing. I think, you know, if they said, be merciful to me, son of David, he would say, well, what do you want? I mean, he'd ask a blind man, what do you want? You know, we would think, well, the obvious answer would be to get his sight. Well, Jesus didn't assume that. Jesus said, well, what do you want? And life, I believe, is asking that every day, what do you want? That was a good teaching. I haven't even gotten my outline yet. What? The rest of the title is Healing Your Mind, Healing Your Heart, Healing Your Life. I'm kind of in this zone anyway. I had signed up for this I thought it was a lecture series. This Dr. Joe Dispenza, who I've quoted before, really liked this guy a lot. He used to be a chiropractor, but he's very spiritual. And anyway, he's going to be in town, so I had signed up for it. And I didn't realize it's more like a meditation workshop about, because this guy actually teaches about how you can even change your DNA by the thoughts that you think. And he's had some really good success with people overcoming disease and things like that. And it's not cheap. I mean, it's, you know, you get what you pay for, and I paid for it. I was going to let the ministry pay for it, but I thought, no, I want to pay for it, so I want to take it seriously. And I'm supposed to read a book before next weekend. Oh, Lord. I look to see there's a thing you can download, an audio book. I think I may do that one. but anyway, I was already kind of going to be in this zone anyway, because he talks a lot about healing your life by healing your thoughts. So I don't really preach sermons anymore. I like seasons of revelation. That's why I do monthly series, because once I put the words out there, this is what I'm going to teach on, then all month long, it attracts things. You know what I mean? It's like things will happen that confirm it. Events will happen. You don't realize how much you're creating the events of your day, but you really are. I went by Christina's store Friday because I was taking the boys to see a movie, and then I found out she was back in town. And I said, "You want to go with us?" She said, "Yeah, I'm closing the shop early. I'm going to." So we all went. It was a really cool movie about how they did Sgt. Pepper's and how they deconstructed their Beatlephiles like I am. So we really got into it. It was cool. But I said, "How's your store doing?" Because, I mean, you know, starting a store. I mean, she got her own business loan. She did that herself. And she's been there half a year, and she's doing really, really well. And she said, "But it's amazing. It's so simple. If I get up in the morning and say, I'm going to sell some stuff, I go in there and sell it. If I have a good attitude," she said, "if I don't, I won't sell anything." She said, she says, "even if I pay somebody to stay in here for me, they don't sell stuff like I do." She said, "when I'm here, I love it. And, you know, I talk to the people and everything." I said, you're a natural at it. And I'm so proud of her. But, so a lot's going on. We're all in this zone. By this time next month, we're going to be healthier and better and smarter and stronger. We may even be younger. I can't promise you a full year, but I think we shaved some months off. I think we're going to be at least 4 or 5 months younger. Maybe a year's worth. Well, you know how they have those virtual reality tests that you can take? Every time I take one of those, I score like at least 10 years younger than I am chronologically. So if there's virtual age, on computers, why can't there be? I told Ken this morning, I said, "You look like a teenager today." You know, teenagers shave their heads. Now teenagers can be bald. I'm like, "Who's that young guy?" I'm embarrassed to be seen with this young man. People think I'm a cougar. Anyway, all right. Enough of this foolishness. I want to show you the scripture. I may have referred to this since we've been here. I honestly don't remember. But I think it's an important scripture. This is Proverbs 18:9. And first, I'm going to read it to you in the New King James. And this is what he says. He says, "He who is slothful in his work is a brother to him who is a great destroyer." Now, what's that got to do with going next level, healing your life? What he's saying here is, you could say, "Well, I didn't do anything negative to my life. I just didn't do anything at all." And sometimes not doing anything at all is really doing something negative. Let me explain it to you this way. Those of you that own a home, if you own a home, there's something all the time. Even if it's a new house, there's something all the time. When we had that house in Covington, sweet Lord, that thing was built in 1900, and it was something all the time. And that house was on the historic registry, so every time we did something, we had to go meet with this council that met once every 6 months to see if we could get a new roof that we were paying for. It wasn't them, but they had to. I remember one time I put up a little picket fence out there, and I got a call from the historical society. "Mr. Swilly, your picket fence has been met with approval for the Newton County Historical Society. And actually, for my records, there was a picket fence there once before. And I thought, well, what if it hadn't met with your approval? What if I had to take it down? Like, what the what? That's why I live in a nice little loft now with a concierge. And I'm much happier. But that's the price you pay. If it's an apartment, you call somebody. If it's your house, and it's great to own a home, but if it's your house, that lawn is your responsibility. That plumbing is your responsibility. You got to get that termite letter. You know what I mean? If part of the roof blows off, I'm stressing y'all out. You're like, we know. We're homeowners. And you could say, well, I didn't do anything to destroy the house, but if you don't do anything to maintain it, you've seen those houses that stay vacant for a long time. It's incredible what happens, like, in a year's time. You think, well, vandals didn't come in to destroy it. What happened? It was just nobody was there to keep it up. Well, if that's true for just a house, how much more is that true for your life? If you don't stay on top of it, if you don't maintain it, if you don't maintain your health and your thoughts, and that's why it doesn't matter if I've taught something before and I'm going to teach it again, I have to do it. Scripture says we have the need to give the most earnest heed to the things that we've already heard, lest we forget them. I love fried chicken. I'm going to eat fried chicken again. I don't say, oh, I know what that's like. No, that's something I will eat again and again because I enjoy it. Well, maintenance means, yeah, I know to be positive. Sometimes I'll read somebody post something that I've said. Sometimes this is something I posted 2 years ago, and I think, wow, I'm glad you reposted that. I need to be reminded. I wrote A Year in the Now in 2000. I can't tell you how many times the 2000 version of me speaks to the 2017 version of me. It's amazing. It happened twice this week, how the me of 17 years ago was prophesying to the me of now. And I think, wow, who wrote that? That's why when you post it, you don't put my name, I put the link on there. You can buy. People, oh, this is amazing. Who put? Buy it. Amazon.com, JimSwilleyBooks.com. It's not a mystery. Somebody sat at a computer and wrote this stuff. Well, that's so great. Where did you get it? From me. I wrote it. Got a basement full of them in my parents' house. Need to move some more. It's in its fourth printing. And we sold two last week. I don't know who buys them, but about every Thursday, Avery said, we sold three books. I don't even talk like that anymore, and people are still buying them. So, like, gear in the now, buy it. But now here's, look at this. This is, I love the Amplified Bible. I love the original. They've revamped the Amplified, but I like the classic. This is what Proverbs 18:9 says of the Amplified. They really caught the meaning of what the writer was saying here. Look at this. He who is loose and slack in his work is brother to him who is a destroyer. And look at this. And he who does not use his endeavors to heal himself is brother to him who commits suicide. That is a strong statement. You could say, well, I would never put a gun to my head and kill myself. Well, if you're eating bad for yourself and doing things that you know are destroying your health, you're killing yourself at a much slower rate. Oh, did I just get too? Oh, I went too deep there. Do you know what I mean? Like, you think, well, I would never do something so drastic to end my life like that. You may be doing things right now that are detrimental to your health, that you don't think you're committing suicide. You're just doing it at a much slower pace. And it's so interesting to me that the people who interpreted this picked up on this. It's not just he who is slothful in his business is brother to him who is a destroyer, but he who does not use his endeavors to heal himself. Yes, go to the doctor. Yes, take your medicine. Yes, get the operation. But most importantly, make the decision to be well. It sounds oversimplified, but that's really what it is. Every day to decide, I'm going to feel good. I posted this, I don't know, a month or so ago. But sometimes when I go into Starbucks, they'll be playing something on the Muzak. And it's amazing to me how many times when I'm standing there waiting for my coffee that I really get a message out of what they're playing. One day I walked in and they're playing James Brown, "I Feel Good, na 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 na, I Knew That I Would." And he kept saying it over again, "I feel good, na 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 na, I Knew That I Would." And we, you know, my generation, we grew up with that song. So good, so good, I got a you, ow. Hardest working man in show business. But this is what you think, well, how would you get a message out of that? He says, "I feel good because I knew that I would." In other words, it wasn't a fluke that I felt good. I planned it. I planned, well, tomorrow I'm going to feel good. Or I'm going to go on this vacation and I'm going to relax. You have to define your terms. You know, when you go out of town, you say, "Look, I'm going to be on the beach, and unless it's somebody real close to me that dropped dead, I'm going to need you not to call me." And even then, make sure I was really close to him. See if I maybe send some flowers later. Because I'm going to need, you were saying today that people are posting 9 days to my vacation. You know, people that only get X amount of days, those days are important. So when you say, "I'm going to be on the beach, and I'm going to need nobody from the office emailing me." Some people say, "Well, I texted you and you didn't return my..." Right. That's when I check in and say, "This is where we are," that means I'm in a movie right now. So unless it's an emergency, your question can wait. Some people say, "Well, I texted you last week. Last Sunday, there was no service out there. In the afternoon, I got everybody's text looking for them. Like, well, I'm not going to return it now. I couldn't return it then. I'm not going to help you now. You're home now." But you have to, I'm saying, if you're going to relax on your vacation, you have to plan to it. Relaxation doesn't just happen. You got to plan sometimes. You know why some people go on a cruise? You know what they really do? Because you can't get to them on the cruise. You know what I mean? Whatever it is, you're like, "I'm out here in the middle of the ocean. I'd like to help." But, you know, if somebody calls with some drama, you're like, I can't hear you. What? Bad connection. You heard them clear as a bell. But there's something psychological. For me personally, I don't enjoy that much about, like, at night and cruises. I'd like to get on the land. But I understand the psychology of it. It's like, I want to be away from where all the stuff is happening out here on, hopefully, calm ocean. But that happens every day. You decide you're going to have a good day. You decide. We were in this conversation that I had with Christina this week. She's talking about how her sales are nearly directly related to how she feels emotionally. I said, I totally understand that. I said, especially back in the day when I was mentoring a lot of like young ministers that had never preached before, and they would just spend hours and hours and hours in preparation, and I would tell, they would you know, want to get some feedback, like, "This is all the hours I'm putting into it." And I would say, "Look, preparation is important, absolutely, and especially if it helps your confidence level. But can I tell you, this sounds superficial, but you need to concentrate on you more than your material. Because if you're sleep deprived because you overstudied and you don't feel good, let me tell you, you want to feel like when you stand up in front of people, you look like you wanted to look, and you looked your best, you felt your best, whatever. Not because you're egocentric, it's because you want to not be distracted by those things. You want to feel good enough about yourself that you're not the message so much as you can just let it flow. So I would say, like, yeah, get your outline, but don't overstudy it. Because when you overstudy it, you don't have any life in it. I remember when I was in college, I had to take a homiletics class. Homiletics is technically the art of preaching, and there's a way that you do it. You're supposed to have a text, a subtext, 3 points, and then you have a conclusion, and there's a structure, and which actually I ended up using a lot I remember at the time thinking, I'm never going to use this, and I actually did. I mean, it was good. But I had been preaching since I was 13, so by the time I got to college, I had like 5 years under my belt. A lot of these guys had never preached at all. And so you were supposed to put together a 15-minute sermon, and they videotaped you, and then the rest of us would critique it. Some guys left the ministry after the criticism. But I would see some of these guys, I knew they had prepared and prepared and prepared, and they would get up and say all of their stuff in like 3 minutes. And you were supposed to fill up the time, and the camera kept running, and you know the professor would be like, keep going, and they'd just look in the camera, covering those points again. And I would think, I could get up there and, what do you need, 5 minutes, you need an hour, you need 2 hours, you need 30 seconds, what? Just tell me how much, I can fill up some time. That's why early on I learned I memorized a lot of scripture because it came in handy to know to quote it. When I used to do TBN and I'd sing a track and the guy in the control booth didn't have my right song or the track wouldn't play and you're on live television and there's a red light looking at you and they're like, do something while they're trying to fix it. You got to be able to look in that camera and say, let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also. I mean, I can't tell how many people came to the church over the years because they saw, wow, I saw you in a pinch. You still came up with something to say. I know I've been doing it a long time. But you got to, like for me personally, during the week, if something happens that's really good, I'll just kind of make a mental note of it. Because if I don't talk about it on Sunday, I'll talk about it at some point. Because we're all writing our own gospel, and each of us have our own little anecdotes that happen. We had a really great day yesterday. It was with Ken's kids and grandkids. It was his youngest son's Brandon's birthday, so he and his girlfriend came down. We took them Ken took us to lunch, and had a great time with them. And then his older son Nathan and Christina and Addie came. Yeah, that was us. And this place, Top Golf, where you can go in and golf till 2 o'clock in the morning, and they did. But they came and dropped Addie off with us. His ex-wife had Emily, the younger one. But it was really, it was fun. I hadn't been with a toddler in a while. We had her at Centennial Park, where they have the dancing waters, and she was wanting to get in it, and we didn't want her to get wet. And at a certain point, I had already slipped once because it was wet on the pavement. She tore off for that water. She was going for it. And I saw Ken take off after. I was like, please don't fall. Please don't fall. And I just remembered, like, ooh, look. She was cute. I probably got 3 or 4 things for sermon material just spending the evening with her. Sometimes she calls me Papa Jim. Sometimes the last time it was Jimmy. Last night I was Jim Jim. And I was sitting in the chair. We were watching Finding Nemo. We got back to the loft, and he was sitting on the couch with her. I was online, and I kept hearing say, Jim, 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 Jim. I said, are you talking to me? She goes, I love you, Jim, Jim. I'm like, but I just little things I was making mental notes of, like, you know, well, this is a cool day. When my kids were growing up, if they ever did something funny or embarrassing, they would say, Dad, please don't talk about this in your sermon. I would say, do you know how many times I have to preach in a week? Anything that happens is fair game. Anything that happens in this house that I'm paying for, if you know, you can work it out in therapy later, but if it makes my point, and it's especially if it's funny, I'm telling it. Anyway, let me show you this quote about going next level. I like this. This guy's motivational speaker says, getting to the next level always requires ending something, leaving it behind, and moving on. Growth demands that we move on. Without the ability to end things, people stay stuck, never becoming who they are meant to be, never accomplishing all that their talents and abilities should afford them. Now, when you think about how do I heal my heart, heal my mind, heal my life? Well, there are certain things that you outgrow. You know, I'm human. I can get my feelings hurt like anybody. But I also know there's a time when it's too much hassle to maintain a hurt. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know what? I've hurt long enough about this. I don't care anymore. This is stupid. I don't want to think about it. I'm going to have to move on. And if you keep waiting for this apology that's never going to come, you're wasting your time. Sometimes you just have to lay something down. Some destructive thought, self-sabotaging thought, something that you constantly say about yourself that sort of tears yourself down. At a certain point, you have to say, I'm never going to go next level till I stop doing this. You don't have to tell somebody what's wrong with the way you look. If somebody says you look nice today, you don't have to tell them that you gained 10 pounds last week. If they didn't notice it, then just don't say nothing. I hate when people argue with you. You look good. Oh, I do not. I'm fat as a pig. Like, well, you know, now that I look at you, I was thinking you look good, but in this light, yeah, you could drop a few. If they say it looks good, just say thank you and move on. I don't know why this happens, but I've actually gained weight before, which, you know, after a certain age, it requires some maintenance. I don't want to say it's difficult. I'm just saying you got to stay on it, Jesus. And somebody, I don't know if I was, somebody was trying to hack me or whatever, but somebody was sending emails under my name to Ken about weight loss. I don't know how they did it. Did anybody else get one? I guess the problem was fixed, but he texted me one day and said, did you send me this? It was like, there's some things I've been wanting to talk to you about. I said, no, I didn't send you that. Like, what are you doing? So now, if he orders a dessert, I'm like, I'm going to send you an email tomorrow. You have to, you know, there's at a certain point, you have to say, I'm just not going to eat this anymore. It's not worth it. You know what's really encouraging to me? I see people, some of you in here, I won't say your names, but people that smoked for years and years and years that quit smoking. That's really encouraging. And you see that somebody could have a destructive habit that many years, because a lot of people, believe me, I've been on deathbeds with lots of people that they're like, you know, I ain't never quit. And I'm like, I know, it's clear that you're, but your brother smoked since he was a teenager. I would have never thought he would have laid it down. And sure enough, he did. And that was, 2 years ago? And what that says to me is nothing has to last forever. I meet people that ate horribly for years that now say, I can't really eat like that now. And I don't want, it's not worth it. Anyway, that's not just true for health issues. That's just true for just wrong thoughts that you maintain. Some of you that know me, you know my story well, will understand what I mean by this. But I was, Alec Baldwin does this podcast called Here's the Thing, and he interviews people, that the kind of people I'm interested in hearing, and I love good interviews. So I've been listening to his stuff for the last couple of weeks. Just when I get in the car, I'll play one of the podcasts. And I was listening to an interview he did with Jerry Seinfeld. And Seinfeld, he asked him, he said, why? He said, you just seem like really happy and, you know, like you don't seem tormented like a lot of comedians or whatever. And he said, yeah, I am. I mean, I really enjoy my life. He's just incredibly centered. But he said this. He said, what was your family life like? He said, well, my dad left home when he was like 11 years old and really never had a family. And my mom, whatever the situation was, they had a very unconditional family. And he said, it just didn't matter. He said, my dad never told me he loved me, never told me he's proud of me, never threw a ball at me. I don't care. It didn't matter. And you could tell he was telling the truth. And when I heard that, I thought, that's really healthy to be able to say something like that. Like, yeah, you know, it's not worth being. And you could tell he was not being dismissive of it. He was saying, I didn't, you know, I was just trying to get out of there as soon as possible, and they were trying to get me out. And we're like, okay, good, thanks. I thought, that's... I know that's kind of like a New York mentality, maybe, of where he grew up, but I thought that's kind of healthy. You know, just like, yeah, my family's dysfunctional and I don't care. Like, oh, okay, well, that's different for all the people that have spent years in counseling in a fetal position because daddy didn't tell you he loved you. Like, So I thought, but it's interesting how sometimes somebody will say something that you think, I like the energy on that. I think I'm going to adopt that into my, I like the way that felt. Because we've all got sad tales. We've got things that didn't happen in our childhood like we would like for him to. You can't go back. So at some point you have to say, I'll fix what I can. I'm not against therapy, but let me tell you, no matter how many times you dig that thing up, it's still going to be what it is. I mean, you can try to rethink it, I guess. But if it was a horrible thing that happened, it's a horrible thing that happened. It just is. And there's no, like, if you lost your parents at an early age, that stinks. That's horrible. There's not enough something in the world to take that away. So you have to say, well, that was part of my reality. And I have, you know what, I've been able to counsel with several people lately, and I do think this is true. If you are a parent, if there were certain things you didn't get in your own life from your parents, there's a way that you can, this is an abstract idea, but you can parent your own inner child by not passing on something to your kids, but changing it. You know, like, well, I'm not going to pass that on to my kids. And in some way, because everything's connected, it's healing me. I'm healing myself by being a better parent to my kids than my parents were to me. And it changes the focus of you being mad at people who probably were doing the best they could with what they had, you know, with what they had, what their generation or whatever. That's the best they could do. And there was a woman I used to counsel with that she just couldn't get past the fact that her dad never told her he loved her. And it was huge. I mean, every time we counseled, that was the focal point. So one day she came and she said, I've decided, you know, he's very old and he's not going to be with us much longer. I've got to hear him say it. And she said, I'm just going to go confront him. And I said, well, if you think that's what you should do. So she goes and says, you've never told me you love me. And he said, well, of course I love you. She said, when he said it, I realized, oh, he loves me. He's just not verbal. And I've, like, wasted a lot of time. Like, remember, and I know it's politically incorrect, but remember when in Gone with the Wind, when Melanie died and Ashley was all upset and Scarlett has this epiphany. She goes, you mean you really have been in love with Melanie all these years? And so I've just been believing in something that never existed. I'm like, yeah, you idiot. You got Clark Gable in bed with you and you're lusting after Leslie Howard. I could have told you that. You already had Rhett flipping Butler. What is wrong with you, girl? And just when she has this, oh, you mean you weren't in love with me? Like, duh, you think? Sorry, I take the movies very seriously. The characters in movies are very real to me, just so you know. All right, let me show you this. I like this quote by this woman. She says a lot of good things. Every moment of this experience we call a physical life is determined by the choices you make in your thoughts, intentions, and actions. Thus, when you choose to experience a thought, image, or activity from a place of loving, joyful, and compassionate intentions for yourself and others, you have the power to weave a lovely fabric that heals your mind, body, and soul. When you choose differently, the fabric you weave may contribute to an experience of suffering and pain in the form of mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual anguish. The choice is always yours. Let me connect that with something that Eddie said today before one of his songs. We talked about his grandson, and he says sometimes it's normal to be sad. He's exactly right about that. It would be bizarre for something like that to happen to someone that you love and you not feel it. I want to make sure, as much as I'm about the positive and all that kind of stuff, I don't want you to ever think I'm telling you to be in denial. I think denial is weird and unhealthy. But he also said, you know that you will get through it. It's like Jesus saying, I will be in the heart of the earth for 3 days, but I'll be back. I believe you can prophesy your own resurrection. But in the meantime, Like, even when somebody says to me, oh, I've never been depressed a day in my life, I think, well, are you a sociopath or something? Like, that's kind of bizarre. Have you not ever been through anything? I mean, I don't think I suffer from depression, but I've been depressed before. And in times where I thought it was appropriate. I never like these funerals where you go to it and people are like, we're not going to shed a tear because she's on Streets of Glory. And you're like, the guy's mother died. Would you let him cry a little bit? Like, we're not saying we don't believe in the afterlife, but Jesus knew he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead and still wept when he saw him and saw that he was dead. So Ecclesiastes says there's a time to weep and a time to laugh. And so that's appropriate balance. What this is talking about is choosing what you're going to dwell on. That's what makes up your life. Your life is made up of lots of thoughts, lots of energies, lots of vibrations. You know, I'm going through a time, you know, I'm watching, my mom and I are both watching our words about my dad, but he's been diagnosed with Alzheimer's, and it's progressing. I mean, it just is. I mean, I spent time with him this week in a neurologist, getting another MRI to kind of see what it is and what it isn't. And it's very sobering. And some of you have seen your parents go through it. It's very sobering. It makes you think about your own life, and it just is. And I'm, you know, he wouldn't want me saying even this much, so I'm not going to say much more. But I would be lying if I said there haven't been some days recently that I had to really work through some stuff. And it doesn't mean that I'm negative. It means that, wow, this is a rite of passage, that I have reached the age that I'm dealing with this now. And I don't know what the next thing is. But the good news is when I call and they've had a good day, or he see, you know, the meds are working or whatever, then I'm like, okay, well, good. Well, I'm gonna enjoy my day, and I'm not gonna feel guilty about it, and I'm here if you need me. But yeah, you do feel some stuff. And it would be monstrous of me to say I don't feel anything. Of course I do. I would never want a man like him to experience something like that, and he sure wouldn't want to either. So we're having to, it's a new normal for us, and we're having to figure out, well, what's the, you wouldn't know, like when he was here the other day, his verbal skills are good because he preached for 60 years, but Christina sat with him and he didn't know who she was. So it's like that's the reality that we're dealing with, and it just is what it is. I'm not trying to uncover him, I'm just saying that is a reality in my life right now, that as an only child, I mean, I feel the weight of it. And there's nothing to do about it. I mean, it is what it is. I knew that, you know, some of you have already been through it. So what does that mean? That means I'm still, if I can get a number, I'm going to run the Peachtree on Tuesday, and we're going to have a great 4th of July, and today's a great day, and I'm still funny, and I'm still me, and whatever. It's not, nothing is either or in your life. Do you know what I mean? It's all a little bit of everything. And anybody who says it's not, they're either lying or they're out of touch with reality. Nothing's ever all that bad, and nothing's ever all that wonderful. It just is what it is. And there's stuff that you deal with and you look for. You know, Paul said, think on these things. He didn't say the other things didn't exist. He says, think on these things. As I've told you before, I'm a news junkie. Oh, my God, I watch way too much news. And I can tell when I'm like, I've got to turn this off. I've heard them tell the same news story 5 times in a row. 5 different commentators have basically said the same thing. And there's nothing I can do to fix, you know, my sense of responsibility feels like, well, I need to know what's going on so I can help fix it. Well, some things you can't fix. They just are what they are. So you have to say, all right, I want to be aware. I want to know what's going on. But even last Sunday when Robert sang I Think to Myself, What a Wonderful World, that song, that to me, that song's a hymn. There's a holiness to that song. Because, yes, I know there was a shooting in Little Rock last night. I mean, you know, every day when you turn on the news, you're like, dear God, would people stop shooting each other? Like, what the heck? And then you have to say, all right, I'm going to choose to see the world that I want to live in. And it requires some effort. But what this is saying is whatever whatever part of consciousness is going to collapse into your reality, it has to be filtered through what thoughts you're going to let in. You're the gatekeeper over your life. You're the gatekeeper over every day of your life. You have to decide. Sometimes you have to weed some people out. You have to not accept some things. Say, look, don't take this personally, but you stress me out. And I'll talk to you if I have to, but I don't really want to. Do you know what I mean? I mean, do you all know what I'm talking about? And there's people in your life that you're going to have to talk to because they're part of your world. But you're like, you need to prepare. When you see that name come up on that caller ID, you're like, oh, Jesus, you got to help me. I'm going to need some grace. And, you know, go ahead and be the thermostat, not the thermometer, you know. Sorry I missed your call. There's other people, every time you see that name, you're like, oh, this will be good. This is going to be good. Because every time you talk, they got something funny to tell you or something. They got something positive. And if it's bad news, it's still a positive spin on bad news. All right. I don't think I've ever used this guy before, but I like his quote. He says, this is cool. All minds are joined, therefore all healing is self-healing. Our inner peace will of itself pass to others once we accept it for ourselves. Let me tell you something that happened to me just this week that I experienced this. But I didn't think he was going to post anything about it on his Facebook page, but Robert sent me a long personal message, to tell me how their court date went. Sometimes I don't click on his stuff just because I don't want my phone to buzz all day with all the people that are, you know what I mean? It's like, I'd rather just, I got you. I'm glad. But when he told me, he wrote me, because they grilled him in this court, and they asked him like really hard questions, personal questions. I'm not telling you anything Robert hasn't told you himself, but he's had some bad things happen in his life. And they knew all about it, and they brought, I mean, he was, when it's a custody or adoption case, everything's on the table. And they put it all, I mean, even questioned his credentials for ministry or whatever. And he said the fact that, when they went in, I hope it's okay to tell this, but the judge said, we're not going to hear any, we're just going to send this little girl to DFACS. And unless everybody has to agree. And he said, no, I don't agree. I want a hearing. And because he did that, the judge, when he heard everything, and this is an older conservative judge in Putnam County, who says, not only are you a same-sex couple, you're an unconventional same-sex couple because there's a great age difference with the two of them. He said, but I don't see, he actually used the word, I'm boxed in. He said, I don't see any way but not to give you, I have to give you custody for adoption. And he said his attorney was blown away. He said, I've never seen like this happen. What's that got to do with this? I immediately felt better when he told me that. It had nothing to do with me. I'm not in an adoption case. But I said, I texted him back. I said, Robert, this gives me so much hope. This just, I know this isn't about me, but that just made my day because I'm so happy for you. And there's so much that it says. It says so many things about, with all the negative in the world, there are some things that are getting better. And with me knowing the story of this little girl, I know she's going to be better off with you. And like, it immediately, like, I wasn't feeling all that great physically, and I immediately felt better just by reading this good news. Now, what's that got to do with my personal health? I don't know how to explain that. But good news is contagious. And when somebody tells you something really good, even if it has nothing to do with you, somehow it translates to, that just made me feel better. I don't know why. Because I'm not a, believe me, I ain't, we loved having Addie last night, but we ain't gonna be a dog. We don't even want a dog. You heard me? You know, we're a little more homebound these days because of our parents, but we're vagabonds at heart. We're like, hey, what time can you get off work? I just made a reservation in Chattanooga. I mean, that's us. We like to get in that car and go. Nothing against y'all dog lovers, but you dog lovers, you can't just get in the car and go unless you got a small dog. One of the first things I asked him, I said, you got a dog? He said, why? I said, because I like to go. I like to go. I already raised kids. I got grandkids. I love them. I like to just leave. No, I can leave my house for days, and it don't matter. Nothing needs to be watered. I don't even have a plant. That thing is maintenance free. People say, it's kind of small. I like it small because I don't need you to give me anything else. I have more than I will ever need for the rest of my life. I don't have any place to put the stuff I got now. If you want to give me something, give me cash or write me a check. I can always use that. Don't give me more stuff to put on shelves. I don't have any counter space. And I like it that way. Because if I had a bunch of rooms, I'm not a pack rat, but I know I would fill them up. Now, if that's what you want, more power to you. I'm not telling you, I'm saying for me. As for me and my house. I like to keep that car gassed up. Because you don't know. Like I said, we're in a different time right now. But typically, ain't no flies on me, Jesus. That was going to be the name of my series this month, but I thought better of it. All right. Here's another quote I want to share with you. Remember, you have been criticizing yourself for years and it hasn't worked. Try approving of yourself and see what happens. Let me tell you, like, if you want to lose weight, stop looking at yourself in the mirror and saying how much you hate your fat body. Because I mean, that will work for a little while. You'll lose a little weight, but you'll gain it back. You've got to love yourself. You've got to just love being healthy. You got to just want the best for your, you know, to eat right. Not to hate. I hate the way I look. That doesn't work. I don't know if you ever saw What the Bleep Do We Know, but there's a scene in there. Marlee Matlin is in it, you know, the deaf actress. And they show that she does this thing where about body image, and this sounds crazy, but in the thing, she looks in the mirror and she starts writing on her body, "I am beautiful, I am whatever." And it was a whole thing about how you change the way that you look at it, because when you accept who you are as being beautiful, then other people see you that way, because you're In a day, you're giving people 1,000 subliminal messages of how to see you. You're either telling them or just whatever. But you have to. I'm all for working out. I need to get back into it myself. But do it not because you're driven, but because you love yourself and you wanna live long and you wanna be healthy. Not because you're just competing with somebody. If you're gonna compete with who you were yesterday, but always moving in a positive direction. And the criticizing, that's why when people say, you don't preach against sin, they're going to be sinning. Let me tell you something, I've been in a church all my life. Preaching against sin does not keep people from sinning. It makes people go covert and makes them feel guilty. It does not change behavior. And believe me, I could cite you examples of hellfire and brimstone preachers that lead lives that would shock you. And the people in their churches are, you know, beaten down all the time. And everybody acts like there's this standard of perfection, but it doesn't exist. Makes them feel guilty. Now, it can squeeze a lot more money out of people. We need to buy a couple of things for Metro and that we've got the money for, but I would like the money to come in. You know, we just need to bump it up a little bit for next month. So I thought about bringing some hellfire and brimstone. I thought I got to do something, end of the world, something I need to. Avery told me this week, it's not bad, it's just we're not where we should be. And I said, I'm bringing the rapture back. Don't make me bring the wrath of God in here. Because I do believe we're creating a different reality. Like even last week, Robert asked me, he said, what do we do about offerings? He said, do you take an offering? I said, no, my people give online and they've already done it. that felt so good to say that, you know? Because I want you to give because you love this and you believe in it. And even if we don't know what the next step is going to be until that next thing happens, this is really awesome. And whatever that will be, if there is something else, that will be awesome. Even on days where a lot of people are gone like they are today for 4th of July, I love, this theater needs to be redone. It needs a facelift. But this is my favorite theater. Are you kidding me? My job is getting up on, I mean, I do other stuff during the week, but on Sundays I get to drive to my favorite theater in my favorite part of my favorite city and do what I love to do. And y'all drive over here and help me do it. What? That's pretty cool. I feel much more successful now than I did 10 years ago, believe it or not. I really do, because I do what I want to do. I live where I want to live. It's not. That's why I don't think, I don't have a retirement plan. I think, well, why would I retire? I like doing this as long as a couple of y'all are going to drive down here and see if I got anything left to say. I'm probably, why not? I got free time to do the other stuff that I want to do. I can show up on Sundays. What? I could still marry and bury people. I got 7 weddings on my schedule right now. So, I mean, you know, I do stuff during the week. I've seen some of y'all in the emergency room. So, I mean, I know where the hospitals are. But I'm not overworked. I'm not. And at this point in my life, I've worked hard. I'm 45 years into my career. I ought to be having a little free time. But everything I do during the week, it all comes back here. It's like going to a big cosmic grocery store and you get produce and you get bread and you get all kind of stuff and you put it together and you serve up this meal. It's good. And then finally, this is, I'm so taken with the story of the woman with the issue of blood in Mark chapter 4. I've taught it for so many different reasons. It's a great story about female empowerment. It's an amazing story about being out of the box theologically. Because like I've taught you before, she didn't have any scriptural precedent to touch the hem of Jesus' garment. It was something she made up. If I can touch the hem of his garment, I will be made whole. That's huge. That's saying you don't go by the book, you go by the word that's written on your heart. That's where the life is. And this woman had this, was a female problem she'd had for 12 years. And you have to understand, this wasn't just a gynecological problem. It was a problem with a stigma. If you go back and read, you know, these patriarchal guys that wrote the Old Testament, they really had issues with the physicality of women. They did. I mean, they have harems. But, you know, Moses, when people want to tell me what Moses said, you know what Moses said? It's an abomination. Well, really? Does your wife sleep in the garage several days a month? Because according to Moses, you shouldn't even let her stay in the house during her time. How insulting is that? What? If I were a woman back then, I'd be like, hell no, you're not going to kick me out of this house that I'm cleaning and feeding everybody. And now, because you're a little bit, you're going to put me outside the camp. You don't want to play the Moses card, believe me. But when it says in the scripture she came behind him in the press, that meant that it wasn't a stigma as extreme as leprosy, but it was enough that, you know, well, some of you of a certain age, girls might have been told you're going to get the curse. Well, that's what they called, this woman was cursed. So that it's like people didn't even want her to get to Jesus. I mean, she had to really, this is an amazing story. It's a story of courage and of creativity and whatever. But this is what I want to point out to it from this. And you know Jesus said this before, but especially to her. Because this is what he says, and this is, I'm using it out of the Phillips translation. This is after, you know, remember she touched the hem of his garment, he felt virtue go out of him. So it would be easy for us to say, oh, well, the hem of his garment did heal her. And yet, that's not what he said. He didn't say, oh, it's a good thing that you touched me. Because something did happen. Remember he said, who touched me? And the disciples said, what do you mean? Everybody's touching. He said, no, he said, I felt something go out of me. I felt virtue go out of me. So something happened. It wasn't just a placebo. However, look what he says. He said to her daughter, which right there, that was his public affirmation of letting everyone know, I don't think of her as unclean. I'm calling her daughter. So just by that, he's verbally affirming her in front of her peers. But then he says, it is your faith that has healed you. That's amazing. Because she said, if I can touch the hem of his garment, I'll be well. That's fine that you did that. Apparently it was something that you needed. But it was your faith. It was your faith, if nothing else, that got you up here to press through this crowd of people that don't necessarily want you to connect with me, that you got here anyway. But he says, it is your faith that has healed you. Go home in peace and be free from your trouble. Now, you're all mature enough to understand what I mean by this. But like in the story of the Wizard of Oz, Wizard of Oz is such a parable. It nearly should be in the Bible. It's such an important thing. And at the end of it, remember when the wizard gives them each a token? You know, he gives the Tin Man a heart thing. He gives the Scarecrow a decree or whatever. But if you go back and look at their journey, when they didn't know what to do, the Scarecrow was always the one that had the ideas. He didn't realize it. The Tin Man didn't think he had a heart, but he's the one. Remember when he saw that Dorothy was in the witch's castle? He said, oh, it breaks my heart to see that she's in there. And the Cowardly Lion was the one that actually, he might have been spooked a little bit, but he would get past it and he would go press in. He was the one that actually did show the courage. They didn't realize that about themselves. You know what the wizard was saying to them? It is your faith that has made you whole. And this whole time they're saying, if I can get to the wizard, he'll give me what I need. Now, no disrespect to Jesus. I'm not saying Jesus was a fake man behind a curtain like the wizard was. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that he says to her, and now listen, Jesus didn't have any problem talking about, you know, he could easily say, you know, one greater than Abraham is here. So this wasn't him being self-effacing. Jesus, he could give himself credit when credit was due. But here he says, no, daughter, do you realize what, this isn't just healing her body, this is healing her self-esteem. Because he not only calls her daughter, but he says, you did this. I mean, if there is somebody that we're going to go stand before one day, if there's a literal person on a throne somewhere, is that what it's going to be when you say, you brought me through all these things, and he says back to you, your faith did that. Yeah. I mean, can you imagine the affirmation? Bishop, how can you believe that? Well, let me tell you why I believe it. Let us make people in our image and let them have dominion. It's called growing up. I loved all the stages, you know, we were talking about, you know, we were dealing with, she's not in diapers last night, she's in pull-ups, so we're, you know, that whole thing. I changed diapers, I did, you know, I was a very hands-on dad. I love that my kids are grown now and can do their, I mean, I'm there if they need me. And even on Father's Day, Jared was still out of town, but the other ones took me out. And we were all talking about the similarities, and they all said to me, don't you realize, you did this. You, nothing against their moms, obviously. But they were saying, we're like you. We all live in your part of town, we think like you. Yes, they're like their moms, but they're like, you're the common, you're what we all have in common. It was very affirming to hear that. And that's what I want. I wouldn't want them to say, Dad, we just need you so much. No, I'm glad that, yes, I'm in them, but now they've taken it and done their own thing. That's what you're, if there is such a thing as a heavenly father, a heavenly parent, heavenly mother, that's what he, she would want for all of us. Not to be so dependent on them. I know Jesus said, I'm the vine, you're the branch. Apart from me, you can do nothing. You know what that means to me? The DNA is already in you. For whatever is happening with my dad right now, the man I grew up with, 50-something years of ministry with no hint of scandal ever. I can't say that for everybody in my family. I can say that for my dad. Always work ethic, always showed up for church. When they were going through terrible, he might be going through terrible things. The church never knew it. He'd show up. He was a good man. He had integrity. He's a decent. That I don't have to go ask him about that. That's in me, and that's from him. I know the things that are from her. My artistic side, my creativity, whatever. I'm so much like her. It's crazy. I don't have to go and ask them everything. That's already deposited into me. So when Jesus said, I'm the vine, you're the branch, apart from me, you can do nothing, he was saying, my nature is already in you. What he's saying is now go do something, make something happen. But I've probably taught this, it's probably safe to say I've referred to this more than any other gospel story, except for maybe the Roman centurion. I have talked about that a lot. But there's two or three out of the Gospels that are clearly my go-to stories. But this one, I don't know, as many times as I've taught it, this just went off inside me this week in a way that it never has before. Because she kept saying, it says she said within herself, if I could touch him, touch his clothes, it's that touch that will make me well. And Jesus turns it around and says, no, it wasn't. It was the faith that you manifested to get here and believe that this would make you well. But she could just as easily have said, if you spit on dirt and make mud, because that's what he did that once before. What was that, a special miracle? No, you're the miracle. You're making it happen. And that doesn't take, let me tell you something. God's not petty. I love praise and worship, but I don't like the idea that there's a God that is so insecure he has to be told constantly how wonderful he is. Do you understand? There's a fine line there. Like, we all love compliments, but I don't want, if every Sunday I was making, you know, anybody got something good to say about the preacher? Made you get, wouldn't that just be kind of like gross after a while? Like, once in a while, you know, I have a birthday or something and y'all all say a good thing. You only do that about once a year. A little bit of that goes a long way. If I did that every Sunday, you'd be like, good God, how insecure are you that you got to get us to tell everybody how wonderful you are? We showed up today. That should tell you we're good with you. We don't have to just constantly say it. I'm here, ain't I? You know, I'm all for the verbal stuff. Words are important. But actions really do, they say a lot. There's a lot of people that are just, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. Look, the people that matter really are the ones that show up and just do it. They might not say as much. Some of y'all had one of those daddies that grew up in the Depression that he wouldn't even know how to form the words, I love you. It wasn't even in his vernacular. But there was always a roof over your head. That was his way of saying, I love you. And you can't expect him to have grown up in the 60s and be in touch with his feelings and his feminine side. That ain't ever going to happen. So take what you can get. And that's what I'm going to leave you with this today. We'll take it up. We'll explore a lot of this month. But I want to tell you, God is great, but it's your faith. It's your faith that did it. If you've made it this far, and he's the one that would tell you. It's not like he says, That's right, it was all me. You better recognize that's not even the way God thinks. The God that I know says you're empowered enough to become a reflection of the living God. And that if you, ooh, that was good. And that's the point. Why are we here? We're here to be God on the earth. That's what, you know, I'm sorry that some people think that's too out there, but that's what I see. The God that I know, he's saying, I want you to be me. I want you to be like me. Why else? I'm trying to shut up. Why else would Jesus say, it's necessary that I go away? If I don't go away, the Spirit can't come. And it's that Spirit, Spirit doesn't have a face. And you know, when you think of Holy Spirit, you don't think of a Jewish man with a beard and long hair and a robe, whatever. Jesus said, you've got to get that picture out of your mind. And yes, and that you're actually going to do something greater. You're actually going to, I'm going to leave so that you can be me. Really is what he's saying. If I can really get deep for one second more, you say, well, what? All right, if we follow the Lucifer narrative, wasn't that why Lucifer got kicked out of heavens? Because he said, I'll ascend to the sides of the north and become like the Most High God. Well, first of all, Bible historians say that was probably talking about a literal king that lived at a certain time. However, it wasn't even necessary for him to say that. That was the... I shouldn't have opened this can of worms. When the serpent says to Eve, "Don't God knows if you eat this tree, you'll become like him," her answer should have been, we already are like him. There's nothing. That was the point of the. That was the point of the two trees to begin with. Is that you don't even have to look at the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You already are. Let us make man our image. Let us make people our image. Let them have dominion. So anytime you think something's lacking in you, that's the devil. The devil is the idea that you're not complete, that you're not enough. Give no place to the devil. Give no place to that thought of inadequacy. You already are all that because he made you that way. Because if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. If you've seen me, you've seen God. This was possibly the greatest sermon I ever preached. Let's all stand. I don't know for sure, but it's up there. It's up there in a top something. Brenda said it's up there with my Rudolph sermon. You gotta have an inertin to get people crying on Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. That's a powerful story. Something we can all relate to. Ooh, I'm feeling revelation in this picture show house. Good stuff. This is going to be a good month. Good month. Please remain standing. If you'll hit that, and then I will speak a blessing over you before we go. I love this stuff.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy.
Easy peasy.
Simply text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044. And now you can give anytime by texting this number. You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit visionthenow.com and click the support tab. Then my online donation. When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment in Metron.
If you have a check, just make the JESM. And I really appreciate, obviously I love Danny and Gloria and Tawny and all of them, but Danny takes it seriously that he's back there to receive the checks because he's a giver. That's not a hypocritical stance. That's not a man standing back there acting like he is. I know for sure that he is. And I've never said this to him, but I get the feeling that when you hand him that check, he pronounces a blessing over you because he believes in this. And there's a positive energy there when you, I don't know, there's just something about having somebody there to receive it that practices it. If you have cash, pay it forward. Go bless somebody. We're going very next level this month. A blessed 4th of July. Look, America is what it is, but man, I wouldn't want to live anywhere else. Do you know what I mean? And I love it, and I want to see it be okay, and I want people to stop fighting all the time, and I want people to love each other, and I'm just not going to give up that vision of it. I mean, that part of me that can, yes, I know they were Europeans, that when they said all men are created equal, they were thinking of white European men. But the fact is, they put those words out there, and now it's everybody. And now they didn't realize they were prophesying that all means all. It means women. It means people of color. It means everybody. So bless their hearts. They didn't, in their limited time, they spoke a word that is a now word for us. And so celebrate. 4th of July is important. I love, I mean, it ranks up there with Christmas as far as I'm concerned. I always go to watch the fireworks, all that. I want you to have a blessed day. If you're traveling, be safe. If you're not feeling well, be well. Think healthy thoughts. Speak healthy words. Be in healthy relationships. Love your job. Love your car. Love your work. Love your house. If you don't love it, at least be grateful for it until something better comes along. Be grateful for what you have now, and something even better will come. Enjoy your July. Enjoy your summer. Health and life and peace and strength and blessing is yours. And you wake up tomorrow and say, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it. God bless you. Go in peace.